There is a podcast brewing that's about to take over podcasting for good. The only podcast that you are going to need to tune into day in, day out, is the Member Guest Podcast.
If I can hit it down the middle of the fairway, that's great. But again, with the driver right now, the driver sucks.
John Daly, and you're listening to the Member Guest Podcast. Rip it, rip it.
Boys, every time I hear that intro, I get hyped. I don't know about you.
Every time I hear
Johnny was nodding too.
Every time I hear the Bryson driver sucks thing, I just laugh.
Johnny was nodding too. I think Johnny appreciated the guest.
to our guests, welcome to another episode of the Member Guest Podcast. This is Tony. One of your hosts, and we are really, really excited to have an awesome guest on the show with us tonight, the one and only Johnny Wonder.
Yeah, golf claps in the back.
From Callaway Golf. We're really, really excited to have you on, Johnny. Thank you so much for making time to spend a little time with us and our listeners. As we were just chatting briefly before, we're a pack of degenerate golf nerds. We Tinker Jordan got a new set of irons today, so
they're just a temporary set, Johnny. Don't let these guys fool you. It'd be awesome too if you could just tell everybody how you just found us too, because that's actually kind of a crazy story for somebody of your
stature. I was gonna get into that. It's an honor to be here. Anytime I can be in the company of you know, like as a recovering alcoholic, I've been to a few meetings in my day, and you know, and whenever you're around brethren, there's something about you know, having a kindred spirit and having the camaraderie that it's instant. So I feel like I just gained three brothers, three new family members. So that's
so
great.
Johnny, it's just to cut you off here. Big day. Separate from that, I've been sober 13 years in the program.
Nice.
Myself, so
more golf. More golf.
So we hit on multiple fronts here.
Way to go! Yeah, I got 10, and not to make this about sobriety, but my mom goes, she's like, "We're just so proud of you for getting 10 years." You know, like, well, what an achievement! I said, "Mom, you don't get an award for running out of a burning house. Like, all that makes me is not stupid."
Yeah,
I'm just smart enough to not kill myself. So I don't get an award for that, unfortunately.
So it sounds like one addiction to another, probably, or a rejuvenation of an addiction early in your life.
Yeah, I mean, probably. I mean, I feel like I do everything alcoholically, and that's good and bad. You know, I have the obsession of the mind, but I also have the ability to. Can we cuss in this show? I say fuck.
Hell yeah!
Fuck yeah!
No, you can fucking okay. Shit. Fuck. Damn.
I can fuck things up at an elite level. So I kind of have it all. And, you know, if you look at the pattern of my life, like, you know, I tell my friends all the time, like, if I died tomorrow, what a run, man. I'm 46 years old. Like, you know, my job that I have right now is pretty gnarly, but you know, I've had about 35 years of like pretty gnarly, you know, experiences and what I've been able to do. And, so, you know, it's a very chaotic life, but, you know, if I died tomorrow, man, I had a blast. Like, it's been fun.
Good run, yeah. You look, where are you right now? Are you back home or where are you at?
No, I'm in, the glorious sun-kissed city of, Hartford, Connecticut, I think is where we're at. Hartford for the Travelers Championship.
Yeah. Dude. Okay. I was about to say, you look like you're in a hotel. And then I kind of snuck that in cause I didn't want to be like, yeah, man, you look like you're in a hotel. And you're like, no, I'm just at home.
Trust me, my house does not look as adult as this one. I have two kids, two young boys. So there's a lot of Star Wars posters and Transformers and Ninja Swords. And, you know, it's not a lot of lamps, not a lot of like shiny lamps in my house.
Yeah. There'd be crayon awesome. On the wall.
Well, is this a typical week for you? Are you going to most tour events?
My first year, I went to like every single one. So like my first year with Callaway was in 2021, and I was the director of content for Golf WRX prior to that. So I traveled a little bit, but not really on the tour for that. But then once I got this gig with Callaway, which is kind of an interesting story how I got the job, which I'll get into at some point. But I'm like, okay, I'm here. My job is to cover the tour content wise, try to gather as much, tell as many stories from the tour and get as many, you know, social media assets as I can. So like I went to the Honda Classic. I went to the Texas Open. I went to the Byron Nelson. I mean, you name it, I hit it, with the exception of maybe John Deere. I hit all the rest of them. And because that's what you do when you're trying to build a platform, you just try to go everywhere. And, I probably hit 30 to 34 events, maybe like, you know, the first year. Last year I probably hit 25, and this year I'll probably hit 20, maybe. Because after a while, you know, even in your third year, you've talked about everything you could possibly talk about. You've covered everything. You've hit every site. So like, it gets a little redundant after a while. So like, I try to pick my spot. So like, this is an elevated event, and we're close to our ball plant in Chicopee. So I look at it as like a 2-for-1. So I'll hit the ball plant this week, and then I'll also go spend a day or two out at the tournament and see if I can't get anything cool. We got Xander and Rom playing this week. So I think Min was playing, and I have some friends that didn't play in the US Open that are playing this week. So like, I'll find something to do.
And you were at the Open over the weekend, right?
I wasn't there over the weekend. I live in Toronto, so I went back to Toronto on. I'm not Canadian. I'm an illegal alien, by the way. I'm from Seattle. I'm like the one illegal alien in Canada. I came back to Toronto on Wednesday night. So typically, like normal cadence for a job like mine or any tour truck job is, you know, you get in Sunday at some point, and then you leave Wednesday evening and you go back home.
Yeah. Nice.
Is usually how it works.
Any big takeaways or ahas from LACC?
No, it played it, like the winning score is a shot lower than I thought it was going to be. I said 7-9 mm-hmm. under. Not surprised that Wyndham Clark won a big tournament. Like, he's been kind of trending for like 4 years. Like, the whole tour has been kind of waiting for him to break out just because of how well he hits it. He just hasn't quite matched it up until he did it at Memorial. So like, will he win 10 times a year? No, but is he going to be in your top 20 players in the world for a little bit? Yeah. I mean, he's that kind of a talent coming out of Oregon. He was he's doing what people expected him to do now. So
yeah. Monitoring so him for Ryder Cup. He's got to be closely monitored here.
He's got the chops to do it. But as far as like takeaways from the week, look, like, you know, at a major championship, with the exception of the British Open or the Open Championship, whatever you want to call it, not a lot of bag tweaks happen at a major these days. If your bag's not fully cooked by the time you get to a major, like, you're kind of fucked. I mean, if you're searching at a major, you got problems. Most of the time, what our guys are doing is, you know, building new wedges, loft and lie checks. You know, that Mitchell machine on our truck got a workout. Check the loft and lies on putter, re-grips, just normal maintenance stuff. There's not really any wholesale changes. They're not like doing driver fittings on the range or anything. Like, that's not a thing in a major.
That's why I haven't played a major, by the way, because I'm still tweaking the bag every week.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I would imagine a lot of guys play like kind of the same. I mean, out there, Bermuda, right? So they're probably living warm other places. They're just rolling their normal wedges in and playing whatever setup they rock, right? For the most part.
Yeah, maybe back in the day, like 10 years ago, you asked me the same question. I'd be like, yeah, like, you know, some guys came in and got some grinds on their wedges to, you know, take some bounce off or get the leading edge a little closer to the ground. Like, the way that these kids design their bags now, and you got to remember, everything's so data driven now, like, mm-hmm. and that really applies to how they build a golf bag. You know, it's all based on data, stats, trends, all that stuff. So by the time they get to Kapalua, for example, the only question mark is how is the new driver and the new fairways going to perform on course? And they won't have that answer until 3 or 4 tournaments in. So unless something's drastically wrong, John Rahm will take a little while to warm up. Now, he warms up really quickly. Obviously, he won like 2 of the first 3 or 3 of the first 4. Mm-hmm. But the bags are sort of cooked to travel anywhere. And then they might have a 15th club, like a chicken stick or a 7-wood or something, you know, that might replace a 5-wood or a hybrid that kind of flips in and out depending on the course. But their bags are pretty dialed to go anywhere in the world. That's why you don't see a lot of switching these days. It's just not a lot happening.
Clearly you are our fearless leader here as being a degenerate. I've been following you for a very long time from your time on Golf WRX. And what is your childhood friend with the silky smooth swing and the, and he always wears
Nico, that? Nicholas Bellini.
Yes, Nicholas Bellini. And, you know, reading about when you were kids and you'd be reading in people's bags and remembering what clubs they hit when they were, you know, 1999 or 02 or whatever it was. I've been following you for a long time on Golf WRX. You want to maybe share with our listeners kind of, you know, your path in golf and kind of how you got to this point?
Yeah. So I started playing, I'll do this part quick. I started playing golf. Came from a big baseball family. So growing up in Washington, my dad was our baseball coach, and we played select ball, which at that time was Sandy Koufax and Mickey Mantle at a really high level. We won 2 state championships. Baseball is everything. When I was a sophomore summer going into junior year, I told my dad I didn't want to play baseball anymore. I quit and started working at the local country club, which in Seattle was Rainier Country Club. It's where I grew up, and wanted to just pick range balls and smoke cigarettes with my buddies. And that's what I wanted to do. And I did. And I kind of got hooked into golf very, very quickly. And one of the things that happened, like in my first 2 or 3 months of playing golf, was the Fred Couples had a tournament every year called the Ernst Championship. And at the time it was being played at Overlake Country Club. And my dad had a corporate something, and we got in like inside the rope kind of access right by the driving range. And that was back when Davis Love III was with Tommy Armour, and Phil was with Yonex, and Freddie was with Lynx. And it was like, and I remember going on the driving range and looking at their bags and seeing these clubs, you know, like just caked with lead tape. And, you know, Davis Love III had a Tommy Armour bag, but he had Mizuno blades in his bag, and Phil had a big Ping I2 wedge in his bag. And I remember looking at these bags going, well, it says Yonex, but he's got a Ping club in there. And it's like, there's all these different clubs in here, and what's all this lead tape shit going on? And I was just kind of like, just hooked. I couldn't take my eyes off of their bags. I just wanted to know everything. So, just so happens, a couple weeks later, I'm at the grocery store with my mom, and I see a Golf Digest magazine with Phil Mickelson on the cover. You can find the cover. It's him hitting out of a bunker. He's got like the fairway blues shirt on. It's like the tie dye shirts he used to wear. And he's got like the, you know, like the 80s kind of mullet going on. And in those magazines back in the day, Golf Digest used to do a really cool what's in the bag section. Now they do it with pictures and quotes. Back then they used to do specs. So they'd show you a small picture of the bag.
They had everything.
They had lengths, lofts, swing weights.
Was like, oh my God.
Full on. So for me, that became like my base, like, you know, on the, my big thing on the weekends was sitting with my dad, you know, watching baseball and reading the stats section of the sports page. I loved it. I loved stats. That was my new stats. I wanted to know. So my Uncle Rob was a really good player. So I went to his house, and he had back issues for like 6 years of all these magazines. And I just went in and tore out all the what's in the bag parts. And I stapled them together and just had this like book full of specs, like Faldo, Ray Floyd, you know, Ola Faubel, Marco, I mean, you name it, Greg Norman, Ian Baker Finch. I mean, just the list goes on and on and on. And I just memorized what they were. So fast forward to 1997. So I grew up around professional baseball players. So my dad's what he did. He was in real estate, but just randomly we grew up around the Mariners, like Griffey and Buehner. So when I was my dad's best friend in the whole world is Mark Langston, who does radio for the Angels and pitched for the Angels for like 10 years and pitched for the Padres and the Mariners. And he goes, hey, when you graduate from high school, I want to get you a job working in the Angels clubhouse. He's a clubhouse kid. So that's kind of what got me to Southern California. And it was that summer that I met Nico. So one of the things that Nico did, we do, we practice, and then we drive to the Wajamaya, which was in like Orange County. And we would go, and they used to have this magazine called Golf Classic. Mm-hmm. Which is like, you know, the Japanese magazines are in reverse, but it would be just a magazine full of in-hand, like what's it, like WRX pictures of guys' clubs, really? Like Tiger and everybody you can think of. So we used to nerd out on that for hours. So it just got to the point where my knowledge of what was in guys' bags from like 1992 to like current day was just like, it was obscene.
That's so sick.
So I just knew. And then I started getting interested, in 1998 at Sahali Country Club, I went back for the PGA Championship, and I was following David Duval. and it was David Duval and Brad Faxon. And there was this Titleist guy that was following him around with like a handful of fairway woods. And it was those 970 fairway woods that were the really cool ones that Tiger played. And mm-hmm. they're like the tour issue. Like they were really, really cool.
PT-15 and or whatever it was called.
Yeah, it was like, well, there's a PT-15, which the 970 basically was a PT-15 with 970 paint on it. I come to find out it was the same thing, but it was like, back then it was like some rocket ship, you know, you wanted it. So he's following him down the first fairway. And I'm like, well, who the fuck is this guy? Like with the Oakleys on and that's not hitting any golf shot, but is handing clubs to Duval and Duval will hit it. And then they'll discuss the shot and then he'll hand him another fucking club. And I'm like, I want to know who that guy is. And it was Larry Bobka. And if you guys follow golf stuff at all, Larry Bobka's the man that designed the Tiger.
200 yards from my house.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you must be in Minnesota. So was Bobka. Yeah. And he was the first tour rep. And he was more of an R&D tour operations guy. But he was the first guy that I identified. I found out what his name was, found out what he did. And, you know, come to find out he designed wedges for Davis Love. He was, you know, instrumental in the Tiger Blades. That he won the Grand Slam with, like he was the guy that was designing the Titleist clubs, at, you know, right in Titleist heyday, and giving them and testing them with Tiger and Duval and all these players.
He just came out with his own irons too, Johnny. By the way, they're beautiful.
I saw him. Yeah, I know Larry pretty well. So I
played with a guy who hit him.
And I'm really tight with Rocco Media, who lives in your area, and him and Bob Kerr buddies. So he goes into that second swing a lot.
Rocco's there. Talk about tinkering.
So fast forward, and then how I got into the golf business, because remember, like, in no time was I in the golf business at all. I was just a golfer. I just played, loved it. It just passionately followed it until 2011 or 12. I was like member number 1,000 for Golf WRX in the forum. So I think I joined like November of 2005 is when I joined WRX.
Wow.
Right. Cause it was back in the day, it was Bomb Squad Golf and WRX. Yep. Bomb Squad Golf started off as the best one. And then WRX caught him because Greg started going out on tour and taking all the pictures. So in like 2011 and 2012, an ex-girlfriend, a girl I was dating at the time, said, "Hey, you're always on this site and you seem to know a lot. Why don't you see if you can write articles for the site?" And I was like, that's kind of such a stupid idea. Like, yeah, maybe I will. It's a ridiculous idea. Just to prove you wrong, let's try. So there was like an email, like a general inbox email. And it was kind of like, hey, and at the time I was working in the film industry as a development executive for a producer. And I'm like, hey, this is what I do. This is who I am. I've been on the site for a long time. I would love to write for you guys. If you're ever hiring civilian writers, I'd love to figure out how that would work for me. And Zach Zukowski was the editor at the time, emailed me back and said, hey, we're going to start a featured writer program. Why don't you send us a sample? And I was kind of like, oh shit, this guy actually wants to see something I've written. And I hadn't written anything. Like I wasn't like a writer. So I was like, okay, well, what do you want me to write about? I was like, just something fun, whatever you think would be fun. So I called Mark Langston. I said, hey, I have an idea. I'm going to write a fake article about me winning a contest and getting to go play around with my childhood idol, which would be you, even though I've played more golf with you than anybody in my life. And we're going to go play Shady Canyon because that's where he was a member at. So it's like exclusive club, got to play with my childhood hero. And he's like, dude, no one's going to believe you. Like it's so fake. And I'm like, but nobody will know. Like it's never going to see the light of day. It's a sample.
Nobody's going
to know. So I wrote it and they're going to know. And I sent it in and, you know, I get crickets for like a month, 2 months. And then finally I get an email from Zach saying, hey, we loved your story. It's on the front page. And I was like, oh God, oh, like awesome. But oh, wow. What a lie. Like it's just an absolute farce. It's just a farce. So my first story for WRX was a lie. So, but they liked it and they put me into the featured writer program. So like during the Ryder Cup, and if they wanted something reviewed, they'd send me equipment and I'd try it and write about it and whatever, whatever. So fast forward to 2018 and I was still in the film business. I had just produced a movie called Josie, with Sophie Turner from Game of Thrones and Dylan McDermott. And I had at that point had 2 kids and a baby mama and was living in Toronto. Cause that's where she's from. and I had about 3 months of savings left, and the film business was going like this financially. And when you have kids, that's a very scary position to be in. And I just sat, I remember sitting on the couch, it was snowing outside, they were all taking a nap, and I'm sitting there going, what do I know more? What do I know more than anybody else does? And like golf equipment. So I literally wrote up like this long, like manifesto email to WRX about how their website sucked and it had no video and they needed better content. And I was the guy to deliver it. And I don't know how it happened, but you know, I went to Andrew Tursky, who was the new editor, who got it to Richard and Aaron Martin. And a week later, I was at WRX interviewing for the job, and they kind of created a job to hire me. And that was March 1st of 2018. And I was hired to just be behind the camera and produce video content. And within 90 days, I was basically doing all the on-camera for them. I also started writing, then I started covering the tour, then I had a podcast, and then it was like one thing led to another. And then in December of 2020, during COVID, like my birthday week, actually, Cobra, Callaway, TaylorMade, PXG, the PGA Tour, all called in the same week asking if I would be want to be Johnny Wonder just for them, not for WRX, but just be it for one company. And I ended up going with Callaway, and then that's the, where the director of tour content position was created to for that. And hearing,
why Callaway?
Talk for like 20 minutes.
No, that was awesome.
That was sick.
Why? Because obviously some amazing golf brands there. Like, how did you land on Callaway?
Well, Callaway one is the who's not my boss anymore. It really sucks. The guy that hired me is a guy named Jeff Newbarth, who's now the executive producer of media and content for the TGL. That like you know that. Foresight League, they're starting in Jupiter with Tiger and those guys.
Yeah.
But I took the job because I wanted to work for him. Because you kind of pick your bosses and your jobs.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but our niche is like with our podcast. I wanted to start the podcast. We're all club golfers. Like we play at this place called Windsong Farm, which is 20 minutes from here. And we're all like scratches players, but we all have jobs and none of us really compete in like state stuff because we're busy playing club stuff. And right, like our kind of audience for like our podcast is mainly like club players, I guess you could say, like guys who golf is like their passion, their total nut jobs. But there's a lot of like really great stuff out there on the tour. Obviously, that's a huge part of what you do, which we want to get into and really dig in and hear all the stories there. But for us, I would say it's more focused on like, yeah, just like kind of your club golfer. So our club, super interesting. I think it was probably last year, everybody, like it felt like everybody at our club was in a TaylorMade driver. And like everybody at our club was in a TaylorMade irons. And then it's kind of shifted a little bit title. So I went down to play in a member guest in Virginia last weekend where I grew up. And everybody's in Callaway. Like literally we got Callaway wedges as part of the like – Giffy, I want to ask you about the Z grind because I went Z grind. Like half the field is playing Callaway driver. And it was, anyway, it just led to this like interesting observation for me where it's like, why do certain clubs play? I think the way golf clubs get sold almost when you're to our audience, it's like your buddy's playing this hot driver and then six of his buddies go and drive it. You know what I mean? Or go and buy it like the next day. So I'm kind of just interested in your thoughts on that. Like I heard you say, I think in a podcast, like that's a big Callaway club about a specific club. How does that happen? Like what are the dynamics?
Well, it's actually a really good question. So like for example, the farms in, Rancho Santa Fe is a big Callaway club. And what I mean by that is the director of golf is a master staffer. There's a lot of the Callaway brass are members there, but there's a lot of, when I say it's a big Callaway club, typically means the director of golf is a master staffer there, for the consumer or the member, it means that the range balls are Callaway. The pro shop kind of has Travis Matthew and Callaway stuff predominantly, yada, yada, yada. But you brought up an interesting thing because I actually just wrote an article on this about one guy seeing something and another guy wanting it and another guy wanting it. So, you know, like Ricky Fowler and Wyndham Clark have the Jailbird Versa putter, which is 10 years old. Right.
Yeah.
So that whole thing started Ricky Fowler's caddy had it and it's been putting with it for like 10 years. And Ricky started playing a little bit of golf with him and Ricky Romano was making everything he looked at. So Ricky goes to Joe Toulon at the Amex or before the Amex and texted him and said, hey, I'm Ricky Romano's putting with this. I think he sent a picture of it to him. Can you make me one? And of course, you know, like our guys are like, yeah, of course we, you know, we're gonna have to figure out how to find an old head or, you know, jerry rig it together, but they made him one. And, that's when he started putting with, and he's been, you know, it's kind of revived his putting stats. And then like a 2 months later or a month and a half later, Wyndham Clark's playing a practice round with Ricky Fowler. And, Ricky's making everything he looked at from 15 feet and in. So then Wyndham runs on our truck and says, I want one of those Ricky Fowler putters now. So then he has one. And I'm sure it's going to be more of that this week because they both putted really well at the US Open. So now it's like a thing, right? It's like a widget everybody wants. So it's the same things that happen at your club. Same thing happens on tour. You know, it happens.
Yeah, that's super interesting. And then for you, with your schedule and everything, how much golf are you playing these days? Sounds like you're a dad. And are you playing much?
Not enough. No, yeah. I probably, if I'm lucky, I might get to play 25 rounds a year, 30 rounds a year. Like I can hold it together. I stay in between a zero and a two, but you know, I can shoot 68 and I can shoot 84.
Yeah.
Like it's just, and it doesn't matter where I'm playing. I mean, I could be playing an easy golf course and shoot 84 and play a hard one and shoot 68. It just doesn't matter.
Johnny, what the,
welcome to the club.
Yeah. That sounds exactly like me and Johnny are boys. Johnny, on the, going back to the, discussion about like equipment and tweaks and all this stuff, I want your take on like, so I heard a fitter tell me once that like, don't look into brands as much. Like you can, for example, take a Callaway driver and make it exactly like a Ping or a Titleist or a TaylorMade by, you know, doing whatever to, shafts, lengths, weights, all that type of stuff. Like how similar is the technology or is it not? Like are like legitimately, is there better technology from brand to brand that separates some from the others? Cause you know, like when I get drivers, generally you'll hear people say TaylorMade is the longest, but not as forgiving. Ping is the shortest, but really forgiving, and Callaway can fall in between there. Right. So like what's your take on that? Is that true? Not true? Semi-true?
No, I mean, yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. And it isn't. I mean, like we've always, like, excuse me. This year we won because we have a very unique piece of tech. Like we have a 360 degree carbon crown. So what that means for the consumer, the middle of the driver does nothing for the player. It's the face and the weighting around and the internal weighting and the external weighting on the crown of the driver on the outside, right? That's basically what makes it stable, fast, yada, yada, yada. So we have a carbon crown, which we took 25 grams out of that middle part of the driver that doesn't mean anything and able to spread that around the driver. So we're able to take a triple diamond driver, for example, and make it really forgiving, right? Because we can move so much weight around. We can take a normal paradigm standard head and make it really forgiving by moving the weight around. So this year we won the idea contest. The reason why our drivers are doing so well, obviously it's a kind of a splashy story, 360 carbon crown, but in the hitting bay, they're outperforming most of the drivers, and it's happening on the ranges of the PGA Tour. It doesn't mean it's necessarily faster. It doesn't mean anything. It just means overall across the face, your performance is going to get an uptick with a paradigm versus some other stuff's out there, some other things that are out there. Now, it doesn't mean on any given day, if I have a fully dialed paradigm driver and I walk into a Titleist fitter, that Titleist fitter is going to figure out a way to be that paradigm driver. The point to what I'm trying to say is everything out there is pretty damn elite. Like they're all elite.
Mm-hmm.
Ping drivers, yes, are known to be stable. Where they're unique is their center of gravity placement and the shape of their head is very Ping. It's unique to Ping. And that becomes an intellectual property play. Like they have the patent on designing a driver that way.
Yeah.
Right. But you make sacrifices to design a driver that way because it's very hard to make the face really fast where the center of gravity is placed on that driver. So you have to take the good with the bad. So you're going to have a driver that's still pretty hot, but very, very stable. So that's why you see a lot of high speed players play Ping because they don't need the extra distance. They can swing as hard as they want to and hit all the face and the ball's going to still be out in front of them. And that's Ping. Is they're professionals at getting 1% better every year, 1% better every year, right? They don't take big swings like Callaway and TaylorMade do. Now between TaylorMade and Callaway, it's six and one half dozen in the other. like for every 6 years we'll beat their ass, they'll have 6 years where they'll beat ours, because it's, you can't win every year. I mean, big ideas come in, you know, every couple of years you'll get a great idea and that's when you'll be able to execute it.
I mean, I think that sorry for interrupting you. I think there's just a handful of like unique ideas that really come up that are really, really game changing. Like Jailbreak, when that came out, was unbelievable.
Huge.
Right? So crazy.
Huge.
And that's just, they've just continued to reiterate that innovation to continue to differentiate themselves.
Yeah.
Like I think of some unique, like unicorn clubs. Like I personally, like one of my favorite clubs in my bag is the UW. Like that thing
is fantastic.
Amazing.
Yeah. It's, and that's an interesting piece of technology, because the reason why it's so good is because people can't believe how hot it is. It's very fast, right? Like you can hit it a long way, but it still spins.
Yeah.
So
you don't get
usually
the, like,
to get,
you don't get the low spin one like you do in a 5-wood or 7-wood.
No, you get, you know, and that's why Phil liked it. That's why Option Bhatia liked it. That's why Sam and Xander play us, because they can hit it up and down the face, and there's no hot spot, there's no low spin spots on that face, and there's no really high spin spots towards the bottom of the club. It's pretty consistent top to bottom. So for that part of your bag, you can't really ask for more, and it goes a long way. So it's like, it's really hard to mimic. That's why it's such a good club.
Yeah, I love that thing. You know, I think it's just, I think you're right on the six in one hand, half dozen the other for the innovation, you know, innovation between particularly those two club brands. And then every few models, some of the other brands mix in a, you know, home run, like, you know, Titleist has had a couple really good drivers recently, and, you know, whatever it might be, it's just a unique space, because I personally do think innovation matters a lot. Now, yes, has the COR been maxed for a while?
A long time.
In the center?
Yeah.
A long time it has been. But, you know, when you're expanding the size of the sweet spot, that's really where the differentiation comes in, probably.
Yeah, and that's coming down to who's got the best idea to expand the sweet spot, right? So most of it is how do you take weight and distribute it outside of the driver? How do you make that driver head more stable? And the only way to do that is to figure out a way to eliminate weight in the middle. And that's what we did with the carbon, you know, the carbon crown is, you know, we saved 23 grams, I think, of weight out of the middle. And that's all weight we can use elsewhere. That's a big advantage.
Johnny, one of the things that I thought was really interesting about LACC was what we saw in 6 and 15 really in particular jumped out, just being a... Mm-hmm. 80-yard hole that played stupid hard, right?
It was wild, yeah.
I mean, that hole looked sick, by the way, just diabolical when they had it at 80 and the pin was on the right. But, you know, I think obviously there's a huge debate going on. I think the LIV PGA thing has sort of quieted this story for a minute, but the golf ball stuff that's going on, right? And kind of curious from your seat, obviously you work for – manufacturer, are there things, you know, one of the things we've talked about on the podcast is, like, you know, the ball, just at the end of the day, and I think, you know, Scott Fawcett came on and debunked this a little bit, but I was saying, like, dude, if you had 11 degrees aloft and you had or 10 and a half degrees aloft and the driver was 44 inches long, like, there's only so far guys can hit it. I don't know if that's true or not, or are there things like, do you think distance is a problem in golf? And if Johnny Wonder were elected the chair of fixing the may or may not be a problem that is distance, what would he do?
No, I don't think distance is a problem. And I think this conversation's been going on for 20 years, 25 years. It kind of started when John Daly was there and, you know, like, guys are hitting it too far. Then Tiger came on and, you know, was hitting it 20 past everybody and dominating. And, you know, it's hard to argue against him because he was playing with the slowest, spinniest ball of anybody with a steel shafted driver. That was an athletic feat, right? It wasn't equipment. This is the only sport where they would try to slow the athletes down because they're getting too fast, right?
Yeah.
NFL players are getting faster and stronger. NBA players are getting faster and stronger. Track and field, the world record's getting broken all the time. So what are we going to do, give them heavier shoes? I just don't, you know, the argument's always like, well, they're decimating our classic golf courses. Well, then make them tougher. You don't need, and you don't need to do that by necessarily lengthening the golf course. Hike the rough up, you know, make the greens fast, use your brains. Like, there's a million things you can do to a golf course before you lengthen it to make it tougher. And it's okay if these guys are shooting 12, 13 under in a US Open. That's just how good they are. Right. And that's okay. Like, it's okay. Now these kids coming up, these college players, you know, they're all taught to hit it a mile, you know, and this is where the game's going. Do we need a ball that's limited so we can prove to everybody who can really hit it good and who can really control their golf ball? I think if Tiger was still playing, it'd be fun to watch because he would absolutely destroy everybody. If they had to roll the golf ball back and he was like maybe 10 years younger, like 100%. They thought he was good before. Like look to see what he would have done to the field in this scenario. He would have won 20 times a year.
Yeah.
So I just think it's the governing bodies just doing something just to do it. Like, let's just do something. Like, you know, we got to do something. It's like, you know, I equate it to like AOC and like the Green New Deal. It's like, I don't know what we're going to, just going to do something. Like, let's just tear all the buildings down and make them all green. It's like, that sounds like an amazing idea. Like, let's just go do that.
Yeah.
It's like, it's just because you thought it doesn't make a good idea. And they did this whole report. And the biggest takeaway from the report was to save golf course designers from having to make 7,500 yard golf courses and doing this. And I'm like, nobody's telling them to do that. there's not some golf god in the sky that's demanding that the golf course is like, you're just choosing to make the golf courses that way. You can just get 1%. Clever and make a six. Yeah. I just don't, it's just a, like, again, it's doing something just to govern. Let's just do something. We got to do something. It's just stupid. Well,
and there's a ton of stuff to talk on, like the technology and equipment and whatnot. But the other thing that I imagine you probably are involved with, like seeing, you know, you work for a manufacturer like Andy said, but on the brand side of the house, it's been really interesting to see golf brands start to get involved with like other athletes or media personalities or whoever it might be. Like, I know Callaway's got Steph Curry, you know, like, I don't know if you do stuff with him personally.
Oh, but he
like,
does.
How's the,
he's got videos out there.
Yeah. He got stuff with Curry. Like how fun has that been from your seat, and how big of a push has it been for these really large brands to start marketing a different way to folks outside of technology and more like, you know, the cool clothes, the cool equipment, the cool logos, you know, the people that you sponsor, like
Top Golf.
It's
just where the game's going. I mean, the cool thing about Callaway is another reason I chose to work there is Chip Brewer is like, has got no problems taking a big swing. Like, the guy's not afraid to spend money. He's not afraid to lose money. He likes taking big swings. Like, he bought Top Golf during COVID when it was absolutely, you know, crazy to purchase anything at the time. And he worked out a sweet deal. Now they own Top Golf. And, you know, to be honest, Top Golf will probably be our, by a long margin, our main revenue generator going forward, starting probably in like the end of 2024. It'll outpace our hard goods sales, which is just, we're a golf club company, but most of our money's going to come from the driving range. That's wild.
Crazy.
That's so wild.
The visionary is amazing. It's genius.
He's a genius. It's a genius. So Steph Curry, obviously you got to have that piece. And Steph has become a pretty good buddy of mine, which has been fun because he's a gearhead. Like, he could sit down with all of us right now and have the same conversation we're having now. But that's cool. The good thing. Yeah, I'm sure. The good thing's really cool. The Bob Does Sports thing is really cool. Like, it's all, you know, it's very on brand for us, and the relationships with those guys are really, really good. And it's, you know, yeah, it helps. It helps everybody. And we give them exposure. They give us exposure. They get us into demographics that we weren't necessarily touching. My next hope is that we finally kind of identify the next like girl good, like whatever that troop's going to be. Because the girl side of the game is very active, but still yet untouched in a real honest way, where we have that group of good, you know, young girl golfers that know equipment. And
you got like, one of the best that you guys just signed, right?
What's that?
Talking about Rose.
You guys just signed Rose.
She fits into like a different, like, that's, wait till you see that in 3 years.
Yeah.
Superhero.
She's like, I'm not going to get too far into her because we could sit here and talk for 3 hours. She's that's going to get to number one in the world faster than you think, like by the end of the year fast. Like she's that good.
Yeah. What have been some of your, so I know when you were with Golf WRX, you were doing tour stuff, but being in the company on the range a lot more now, I would imagine, a part of the process with Callaway staffers. What have been some of your takeaways and kind of ahas as it relates to the players? And I think I've heard you say guys are seem to be tinkering less and less, or at least the Callaway guys. I know Rom doesn't really make a lot of changes, but what have you seen? What have been some of your observations in your new gig over the last 2 years?
That's actually a really cool question. A couple of things. One is the golf ball is king.
Yeah.
Like it trumps everything the golf ball does. It's the most important. It's the most important part of that whole of the golf bag, and it's the governing body of the tour truck. So how important the ball is to everything. I kind of had an understanding of it when I was at WRX. I didn't fully grasp it until I saw these guys work with some of the best players in the world. I'm like, okay, wow, that's why they protect the ball. If they find a ball they like, they protect that golf ball at any cost. Because if that changes, then everything needs to change. So that's one. And two is spin. Like tour fitting is spin management, essentially. I've never heard a player come on the truck and say, I want to hit it further. I haven't heard anybody say that, not once. It's always managing spin. Constantly managing spin. And 99.9% of the players out there are afraid of being in a spin deficiency, not having enough.
Mm-hmm.
So they're always trying to build in more spin. Hold on 1 second.
That just shows how ahead of his time Tiger was.
It also shows how clueless some general Joe public, because everything you see is low spin drivers, low launch, low spin shafts, and this ball doesn't spin because it makes the ball go a little further.
Yeah, it's out there, you know, they all have, like, I'll give you an example, like perfect launch conditions for John Rahm are like 11 launch at 2400 spin at like 181, 182 ball speed. And, you know, it starts maybe, you know, two ticks left of the center line and falls right. Like that's those are gamer numbers, right? Well, people are like, well, 2400 spin, like 11 launch, that seems like a lot. Like that's enough spin to keep it in the air and for him to curve it the way he wants to curve it. If he could hit those numbers every single time, he would. You know, you don't see guys out there, you know, sub 2000. Typically, if there's a driver out there, a guy hits it straight and it spins less than 2000, that driver's going bye bye.
Yeah.
Because if it can do that on a straight one, God only knows what it's going to do when the player mishits one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. So one of the sayings that they have out on tour is keep the ball in your hand at all times. So the whole thing is keep, you know, ball in hand means it's in your control. You always want to keep the ball in your hand. Ball's always got to stay in your hand. So the best players in the world have the ball in their hand more often than other ones do. That's kind of the best way to explain it. They just have control over their ball on miss hits, on flushers, out of the rough. Like it's well within their grasp. And that's just something I keep in mind all the time when I'm watching these guys.
And do you notice, like, I know a big thing the last couple of years, and this has been going on for a little bit, is just guys have pretty big teams now, right? Like their teams are getting bigger, whether it's like, you know, you've got the mental side guy, you've got the physio, you've got the like locker room
guy. You got the massage guy. And, yeah. Bryson's got a social media guy. Like they got a bunch of guys. Yeah.
Yeah. It seems like that's becoming more and more commonplace. I was just thinking like Tiger being so ahead of his time with just wanting to have as much spin in his hands as he can, just knowing as a player, it's easier to take spin off right for him than it is to add it out on the golf course. So,
that's
pretty interesting.
That's like the main thing that I see. Like if people go like, what's it like, you know, equipment wise out there, like what kind of tips do you pick up? That's it. I mean, learn to love spin and learn how to figure out a way to fall in love with your golf ball and then protect your golf ball at all costs.
So, all this talk about equipment, I could do this for like hours and hours and hours. I'm sure it sounds like you probably could too.
Dude, I was just about to go down the Ventus shaft rabbit hole, but yeah, direct us somewhere else.
I was just going to go down the path. Yeah. You've been doing this gig now for a couple of years, what, like 2-3 years? Like,
this is my third year. Yeah.
Give me a couple like cool stories. We generally like to keep our episodes, you know, 45 to an hour or so. Like, give me a 2 or 3 stories that when they popped up, you're like, how in the hell am I getting
or
to
maybe
do this?
Go deeper into your, I read your 2022 year in review, like your top 5 things that were awesome about 2022. Like a couple of those that were,
I don't remember what I put. Pretty cool stuff.
Well, some of them were stock, so I won't go into that. Like, you pick your favorite.
Well, I can tell you what happened like to me on my first day. So this is my first day with Callaway. It's March 8th or March 9th of 2021. So I just, you know, get in, and I'll keep this brief. But it's day one of our content shoot. So there's 2 big content shoots. There's one in the fall, and there's one at the Players' Championship. And we do it at this golf club called The Yards, which is right across the street from Sawgrass. And I get to the golf course, and my first video, I was doing it with Dylan Fratelli. And then my boss goes, okay, I need you over at the 10th tee quickly. So I scurry over to the 10th tee. He's like, okay, that's Phil Mickelson over there doing photography over there on the putting groove for Odyssey. He's going to come over here, and you're going to do a what's in the bag with Phil. Okay. So I'm like, wasn't expecting that. I thought I was going to have him the day after. So I was like kind of mentally preparing, because, you know, he was a big deal to me, Phil Mickelson. Like, he was one of the reasons I got into equipment in the first place. So I'm like, holy shit. Like, I'm going to meet Phil Mickelson. This is nuts. So I'm sitting there waiting. And then finally he starts walking over, and there wasn't like any foreplay. It was like, Phil, this is Johnny. Johnny, this is Phil. Okay. Phil and Johnny, what's in the bag? Cameras rolling. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And Phil just had enough time to give me a little fist bump. And I was like, oh, shit. Okay, world of wonder, blah, 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 blah. And I started it. And if you watch the interview, it's on YouTube. I think it's still. I hope they didn't take it down. I'll send it to you guys if you haven't seen it. I'm having an existential spiritual meltdown on camera in front of Phil Mickelson. Like, chewing on my tongue, can't get a question out. The benefit that I had is if you ask Phil a 1-second question, he gives you a 1-hour answer. So like, so Phil, you like to change your iron sometimes at Augusta because you're looking for more bounce or whatever. And he goes, that's a great question, Johnny, blah, 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 blah. And the whole time, like, fucking please just keep talking. So my first video that I did, my first big one with Phil, was like, I almost had a meltdown. I mean, I was having I had no saliva in my mouth. I mean, I was a mess. And it's funny, like, ever since then, he's been one of my favorite people to do videos with, because we get along. He's a Gary. Once again, another guy I could sit here and have this conversation with you guys. I spent all day Wednesday with him this last Wednesday. You want to talk about Ventus? We were talking about Ventus because he doesn't understand shafts very well. So I was literally explaining red, black, and blue.
Yeah.
Ventus that he's got in his bag, mind you. He's been playing them both all for like 3 years. He doesn't know what they are. He just knows that he likes them.
Yeah.
So anyway, that was story number one. And then I guess story number two, would be January and February this year with Rom. Because I follow Rom. I walk a lot of practice rounds with these guys. And typically Monday or Wednesday is my Rom day. It just depends on when he shows up on site. And, you know, I'll go walk 9 or 18 holes with him, and that's where we talk, catch up, talk shit, whatever. And I'm good friends with this caddy, Adam Hayes. And being able to see him on the West Coast swing at Bob Hope, or the Amex, whatever it's called now, and then seeing him at Riviera, just seeing how well he was playing and how much confidence he had and how much better he was than everybody else that was there was a really weird thing to be able to be close to. Because I'm right in with him, you know, inside the ropes watching him. Just, you know, I mean, it's that was absolutely incredible. And I'd say the third holy shit moment was, anytime I get text messages, like I fit Eli Manning into a full bag. It was never on camera. It was Callaway flew me to New York to go fit him at a 5-iron golf, and it because he's going to play with his brother at Augusta. He's never beaten his brother. So I fit him into a full bag, and he sent me a picture of the scorecard, and he birdied 18 to beat his brother by one at Augusta with the clubs that I fit him into.
At Augusta, so
that was awesome. That was a cool thing. And then anytime I get text messages from him or Steph, to me is still like, what?
Steph texted me about his golf gear.
It's so surreal. Yeah, it's always about golf stuff. They either need something or they have a question. But it's still like weird to see that number pop up, and it's like, Jesus, that's Steph Curry. Like, what am I doing?
I mean, honestly, Johnny, like that's got to be so cool. But like the biggest thing that I'm realizing in all this, and like when we first started this, it was all about like just being able to talk about this kind of stuff, like total gearheads nerding out about golf and equipment. And it's just really interesting to hear you talk about guys like Steph Curry, Eli Manning, and obviously all the pros too, that they just love talking about it. Like they're the exact same guys, right? They're gearheads. And Steph Curry is like,
because it's so much fun.
Yeah, it is. It's awesome. It just kind of brings everybody together. Yeah. And it's so cool to sit and have these conversations, and just, I love it, man. It's you're one of us. It's awesome.
Johnny, I got to do. Yeah, so go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was going to say,
really quickly, golf.
Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead. you go.
Johnny goes. No, Johnny goes. No, we let the guests go first.
I'm taking us elsewhere. Go.
I would say golf is like the ultimate glue. Like if you play golf with somebody, or if you meet like a real golfer, like somebody that really loves the game, you're kind of buddies with them instantly. It's such a weird sport that way. So like, and it doesn't matter how famous a person is, or you guys are from Minnesota and I'm in Connecticut or whatever. Like, I guarantee if we went out and played 18 holes together, we're hugging after 18. Like, we're trying to figure out when we're going to see each other again. It's like, it's like dating, but you're not dating. You're just having fun together. Yeah. Right. It's like that vibe. And it's like that with everybody that plays, and it doesn't matter who it is. It's just, if you play and you love it, then you like being with people that play and love it too.
That's awesome that you're like a guys like our hero. And so it's awesome to hear that you're just like the real deal. And it's been a couple weeks. I know you did a what's in the bag. Because we're on the spirit of this, I'm going to try to recite it by memory, because that's how much of a psycho I am. I swear to God, it's been a couple weeks. Paradigm Triple Diamond, Ventus Black 6S, 45 and a quarter, 45 and a quarter, D3.
That's close.
Tour wrap, black. Only on your woods, I think. 15-degree paradigm. 15-degree paradigm, like just the regular 3-wood. Ventus 7S in that, I believe. Yep. Is that right? Wow, I'm hot right
now. That's right.
Stay hot, baby. Stay hot, baby.
Birdie 1 and 2.
Yeah, we are on a heater right now. UW for sure.
The third fairway.
UW, 19 degrees. I think it might be like a click down. I don't know what shaft he's in. You got to be in a UW though, is that right?
I'll make a couple of adjustments. Okay. So the driver's right, 3-wood's right. I'm in a triple diamond T5-wood.
Okay.
That I have with a Ventus black, and then I also have a UW that's got a Diamond TD shaft in it, like a
nanogram
TD.
You have a 23
shaft.
Degree in that.
You're right.
The non available.
We have 23 degree UWs on the truck. They're really cool, but they go really high for everybody.
Yeah.
Like they go up too high.
And then Apex Pro 21456. I'm guessing here, I think.
Just Apex 21. Just the normal Apex 21.
Apex 21456. You're an S400 guy. That I know.
Yep.
I don't know what I think. Do you go different grip for your irons? This is such a maniacal move, by the way.
Tour gulvets.
Okay.
Ooh, my irons. Irons.
Maniac move.
Oh my God.
God. All right. Walk us through the rest of it.
No,
I ran out of
Andy, No, you put it in the water on 12.
That was pretty good.
I got respect. 7 through 8 wedge in the TCBs, and then I have a 54 Jaws Raw 10S or something with an S400 and a 58Z with an S400. Then I have an Odyssey 7 crank causal something. The punter that they built me at the Open last year. It's like just this white hot.
Stability stroke lab in that, right? With the red.
I got a stroke lab in that. But I actually have the black swirl, like that nobody knows about. It's like a kind of a tourist Aussie black swirl shaft. And it's just a heavier version of the stroke lab with it's really heavy in the red part. And then it's got a whippy tip. So it's got a softer tip.
Oh, that's sick.
That's nasty.
All right, last question.
It's nasty, yeah.
Last question, and we'll let you go. Any like weird things from guys? Are there guys on tour or that you staff that are like us? I don't think they are.
Yeah, guys.
I don't think they are. Dude.
The no, text pops up and you go, like I don't like want to answer that question right now.
Yeah.
I'm going to go deep.
No, there's tinkers. Like Chris Park does a lot of tinkering. Like he's a big fairway wood guy, tinker. And he's a sober brother like we are. So like him and I have known each other for a while. He's a sweetheart kid, but he likes to tinker. I'm trying to think who else. Siwoo Kim is not afraid to like
one of our favorites.
We love Siwoo.
Let me do you one better. Let me just tell you who the sweethearts are.
Like okay.
the low key would never see him coming. Sweethearts of the Callaway staff. Siwoo Kim is an absolute legend. Yeah. I love him.
Love it.
Alex Noren is an angel from heaven. Like. An absolute angel from heaven. Eric Van Ruin, same thing. Sweetheart, would like bring him home to mama kind of guy.
Yep.
Frank Molinari is quiet, but he's a sweetheart. Who am I missing? Adam Svensson hits it better than anybody in the world. Like if he could putt, he'd win everything. He hits it better than everybody does.
That's wild.
Yeah. And he's an absolute flusher. And I'm missing one person. Hold on. Rom is unbelievable as a human being. Yeah. He's actually a better guy than he is a player. It just sounds really stupid to say that, but he's an unbelievable kid. Sam Burns is like Dustin Johnson, is like a rich man's Dustin Johnson. Like he's
a rich man's Dustin Johnson.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like he's polished, like more athlete.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Corn-fed mule, as talented as he wants to be, like, and I've gotten to know him really well because we were kind of stuck together early on because they wanted me to help him kind of build his profile. So I just Sam and I've just been kind of joined at the hip ever since.
Fun to watch at the match play, man. So fun to watch at the match play.
Dude, he's gonna blow the door down
when he's in full when he's in full flight. He's really really fun to watch when he's like firing all cylinders because he's got a beautiful golf swing, but he's a better putter than he is anything. Like he absolutely puts the eyes out of the ball. And trying to think, there's one other player that I want to bring up that I thought was Emmy Grillo. Emmy Grillo and Adam Hadwin, they're the last two absolute sweetheart human beings.
That's
like,
awesome.
Don't make him any nicer than those guys.
We'll have to give you a couple of, at some point, we'll have to play golf, man. I don't know if you're here for the 3M this year, but, and I know you're working, but a couple things that we do that are member guest traditions that we like to pass on. Next time you're on the golf course and you're close to another guy, play closest to the pin for a compliment. The compliment needs to be sincere. Like it can't be existential or physical in nature. It needs to be like a sincere compliment. That's a big tradition that we have. And then one other is we generally play for merch. So the merch situation can get wild because our rule with playing for merch is you can buy anything you want in the pro shop.
That they'll sell to you.
That they're willing
We've
to sell.
We've known of guys that have bought couches, all that's happened. But if you stick a guy, you're going to get stuck for sure at some point down the road.
Right. So
we try to keep it to like a hat or maybe a shirt. Well,
I will say just a little plug for Minnesota. You could come. You could film some great content with your boy Rocco. You could probably.
Van Royen was playing behind me yesterday at our
Van
club.
Van Royen was at our club yesterday.
Yeah, playing behind me.
Was he really? But do you know who he was? Do you know who he was playing with? His caddy, Minnesota.
It's our buddy. Yeah. Our buddy was his host. One of our best buddies.
Yeah. Oh yeah. He's coming on the pod. He's a legend.
He's okay. You have to get him on the pod. He's an absolute unit. Like
yeah.
And his brother. Yeah. His brother's the same way. There's two.
I literally talked to him about it. Yeah, he's coming on. Yeah. He committed. I told him like we're small, but he said we're gonna grow you. So
then you could come play at Windsong. We could meet up with Van Royen and his caddy. We can get Larry Bobka and Rocco.
You know the best part about all of it? Write off.
Write off.
Yeah, it's a write off. Our podcast is an LLC. It's a write off.
Yeah, it's all a write off. Everything's a write off.
Dude, this was so fun. Seriously, thank you for reaching out, man. I don't even know if at the beginning we said how Johnny. I know we talked before we started, but you just found us. You were listening to a golf podcast on Spotify, and then we popped up. And what did the intro just?
Yeah, it shows, shows what a cool intro guy he is, though, because we messaged you and you were like, "I'll come on for sure." So.
Well, I'll tell you what, and I'm saying this from the bottom of my heart. Like, if I hear stuff in this space, in the golf space, that I think's like fun, I'm pretty good about DMing and congratulating people. Like, hey, your show's cool. Like, because this is a, there's a lot of people in this space now, podcasts and include YouTube creators and IG, and there's so much noise that when you do see people that are doing it and they love it and they sound like they love it, I always try to reach out to them. Like, fuck yeah, dude, way to go. Like. You know, appreciate you don't sound it. Like anything I've heard. This is fun. So, like, I can congratulate you guys on doing something
thanks,
unique.
Johnny.
And I had fun. I had a blast. Yeah.
I don't know if you know
man
how much that
people.
Means to us.
Man
that
of the
means,
people.
That means a lot.
Man
dude.
Of the
Thank
people.
Thank you so much.
Doesn't
appreciate
get better.
It, man. You should have seen the fanboys texting when you sent the DM, baby.
I'm trying not to cry. No, I'm just kidding. I'm good.
What a legend, man. Thanks for coming on. Look forward to keeping in touch, man. Love to have you back on at some point. So, we really appreciate it.
Yeah, you guys know where to find me. It's been an honor, gentlemen. You guys stay out of trouble.
All right, man. We'll see you.
Well, thanks, Johnny. Later.